Chapter 54. Teresa watched as the tiny flames gobbled up the torn pages, then slowly grew higher and brighter as the fire danced over the open books. When it was clear that the fire would sustain itself, Teresa moved quickly to the study doorway, grabbing the file of reports that Wofford had earlier tried to take. Inside were samples of von Wachter's detailed imaging, along with the seismic fault maps and their unsettling red markings, including the chart of Alaska. Casting a glance back at the glowing yellow blaze beginning to erupt at the back of the room, Teresa turned and bolted down the corridor. She moved in a shuffling run, fleeing as fast as she could without pounding the marble floor with a loud patter. Nervous adrenaline pumped through her veins as she dashed along, the prospect of escape at last a reality. The plan was simple. They would hide off the foyer until the fire drew the response of the front entry guards. Slipping outside, they would try to commandeer a vehicle in the ensuing chaos and make a break at the front gate. The fire was now set, and Teresa felt a glimmer of confidence that their humble escape plan might actually work. She slowed to a walk as she approached the foyer, searching for Wofford's hiding spot. He stood where she left him, standing beside a large fluted column. Seeing her approach, he looked at her with dread in his eyes. Teresa smiled in return, indicating with a nod that she had been successful. The normally jovial Wofford stood stone still, his face in a tight grimace. Then Tatiana stepped out from behind Wofford's shadow, waving a small automatic pistol at his back. With a menacing smile, she hissed at Teresa.
A beautiful evening for a walk, no?
Teresa gasped as a chill ran down her spine like the Polar Express. Then seeing the wicked smile on Tatiana's lips, her fear was replaced with anger. If her time was at hand, she decided, then she wasn't going to go down meekly.
I could not sleep. She tried bluffing.
We are so close to finishing the analysis. I convinced the guard to let us retrieve some of the reports so that we could work in our rooms, she said, holding up the file under her arm.
It was a game effort. But Teresa could see by the look in Tatiana's eyes that she was buying none of it.
And where is the guard?
He is closing down the study.
A conveniently timed tumbling of books sounded from down the corridor, the work of the fire burning through a lower bookshelf. An inquisitive look crossed Tatiana's face, and she took a step toward the center of the foyer to peek down the hall, keeping the gun pointed at Wofford. He glanced at Teresa, who nodded slightly in return. As if in a rehearsed move, Teresa flung her bundled papers at Tatiana's face while Wofford lunged for her right arm, the one holding the pistol. With a snake-like quickness that surprised them both, Tatiana instantly spun in a half-circle, sidestepping Wofford's reach as the tossed files bounced harmlessly off the back of her head. Spinning forward, she stepped toward Teresa and jammed the gun in her cheek while the cloud of papers was still fluttering to the ground.
"I should kill you now for that,"
she hissed into Teresa's ear while waving Wofford back with her other hand.
"We shall see what other tricks you have been up to."
Prodding Teresa across the foyer with the muzzle of the gun, a Makarov PM automatic, she led her to the front door. Reaching around with her free hand, Tatiana flung the door open.
"Guards!" she barked. "Come assist me!"
The two guards on the porch, dressed in Mongol warrior attire with their tin helmets pulled low, burst through the door and quickly sized up the situation. The first guard stepped toward Wofford and produced a handgun, which he jammed into the geophysicist's ribs. The second guard, a shorter man, stepped up to Teresa and grabbed her tightly by the arm.
"Take her," Tatiana ordered, pulling the gun away from Teresa's face.
The guard obliged by roughly jerking her away from Tatiana.
A wave of hopelessness fell over Teresa as she looked at Wofford with despair. Oddly, the look of gloom had passed from Wofford's face, and he looked at her with a gaze of hope. Then the vice-like grip around her arm suddenly eased. In an unexpected move, the guard let go of Teresa's arm and suddenly grasped Tatiana by the wrist. With the flick of his powerful hand, he twisted Tatiana's wrist while applying a pincer-like squeeze to her hand. The gun slipped from her hand before she realized what was happening, the pistol clanging across the marble floor. The guard then jerked her wrist again and shoved, sending Tatiana sprawling to the floor with a shriek of pain. "What on earth are you doing?" she cried, rising to her feet while cradling her bent wrist. For the first time, she looked earnestly at the guard, noticing that his sleeves dangled from a shirt two sizes too large. He smiled at her with a somehow familiar grin that seemed out of place. She turned toward the other guard and saw that his uniform was way too small for his tall frame, and the gun he was holding was now aimed at her. Looking into the face, she gasped at the penetrating green eyes that stared back at her with morbid delight. "You," she rasped, losing her voice in shock. "You were expecting Chicken Delight," Pitt replied, holding the .45 aimed at her belly.
"But you died in the desert," she stammered.
"No. That would be that phony monk friend of yours," Giordino replied, picking up the Makarov. Tatiana seemed to shrivel at the words.
"Al, you came back," Teresa said,
nearly welling up at the turn of events. Giordino squeezed her hand. "Sorry to rough you around on the way in," he said. Teresa nodded her head in understanding and squeezed his hand back.
"We are sure glad to see you, Mr. Pitt," Wofford said. "We had little hope of getting out of here in one piece."
"We saw what they did to Roy," Pitt said with a cold eye to Tatiana. "This place isn't exactly a Girl Scout camp. All the same, you saved us the trouble of trying to find you in this palace.
I think it might be a good time to make an exit before any real palace guards show up," Giordino added, escorting Teresa toward the door.
"Wait," she said. "The seismic reports. We found evidence that they may try to disrupt tectonic fault zones in the Persian Gulf and Alaska."
"This is absurd," Tatiana declared.
"No one is talking to you, sister," Giordino replied, pointing the Makarov in her direction.
"It's true," Wofford said, bending down and helping Teresa scoop up the papers that littered the floor. "They designated the destruction of the oil pipeline at the northern end of Lake Baikal that somehow triggered the Seiche wave. They've also targeted specific faults in the Persian Gulf and one near the Alaska pipeline as well."
"They've already struck the Gulf successfully, I'm afraid," Pitt said.
"The data should fill in nicely with the photos that Rudy is taking as we speak," Giordino added. Pitt saw the quizzical looks on Teresa and Wofford's faces. "An acoustic seismic array sits in the lab across the way. Used to trigger earthquakes, we believe, which have already created extensive damage to oil port facilities in the Persian Gulf. Your documents would appear to support the contention. We didn't know Alaska was next on the hit list."
Teresa stood up with an armload of documents when a deafening shrill pierced the hallway. The growing blaze of burning books had finally triggered a smoke detector outside the study, its alarm echoing throughout the residence.
"We set fire to the study," Teresa explained. "Hoped to use it as a diversion for Jim and I to escape."
"Maybe we still can," Pitt replied. "But let's not wait for the fire brigade to arrive." He quickly stepped through the open door as Teresa and Wofford followed behind. Tatiana edged toward the back wall, trying to slip behind in the mass exit. Giordino smiled at her attempt, walking over and grabbing a fistful of her sweater.
I'm afraid you'll be leaving with us, darling. Do you care to walk or fly? He asked, shoving her roughly toward the door. Tatiana turned and snarled at him, then begrudgingly moved through the doorway. Outside, Pick quickly led the group across the portico to the outlying support columns, then stopped. The sound of galloping horse hooves far to his right told him a patrol near the northern edge of the residence had heard the alarm and was charging toward the entrance. Ahead and to his left, a yelling and commotion was erupting near the stables and security quarters. Pitt could see lanterns and flashlights hurrying toward the residence, carried by guards woken by the alarm and rushing there on foot. Pitt silently cursed that Teresa had set fire to the residence. If they had gotten away a few minutes earlier, the confusion might have played into their hands. But now the entire security force was roused and rushing toward their position. Their only option was to lay low and hope the guards surged past them. Pitt motioned toward the rose bushes behind the columns. "Everybody get down flat. We'll wait for them to enter the house, then we'll move on," he said in a low voice. Teresa and Wofford quickly dove to the ground and slithered behind a row of the thorny flowers. Giordino shoved Tatiana behind a budding bush, then clasped a hand over her mouth. With his other hand, he motioned the Makarov's barrel to his lips and said, "Shh." Pitt kneeled down and pulled the handheld radio from his belt, then held it to his lips. "Rudy, can you hear me?" he said quietly. "I'm all ears," came an equally hushed reply. "We're on our way out, but there's a party starting up. We'll have to meet up on the fly in about 5 or 10 minutes. I'll wrap up and head toward the garage. Out." Pitt hit the ground as a trio of guards from the stables approached. Running on foot, they bolted by a few feet from Pitt, barely noticing that the entry guards were nowhere in sight before rushing into the residence. Only a few dim lights were turned on near the door, leaving Pitt and the others hidden in the covering darkness. The horse patrol was still 50 yards away. Pitt contemplated moving past the rose bushes and into the compound grounds before they got closer, then thought better of it. The horse patrol wouldn't expect anyone lying around the entrance. With luck, Teresa's fire would be raging sufficiently that they would all be pressed into firefighting duty. The horse patrol, numbering 8 men, had been galloping fast toward the front entry when they suddenly pulled up hard on their reins as they reached the gravel drive. An uneasy feeling came over Pitt as he watched the horsemen fan out in a large semicircle at the edge of the portico, then stop. 2 of the horses snorted in uneasiness as the riders held them still. Inside the residence, the ringing alarm suddenly fell silent as 4 additional guards approached on foot from the opposite side and stopped short of the drive. The fire was either raging out of control or, as Pitt feared, it had been contained before it could spread. The answer came with a blinding glare of white light. With the flick of a switch, 12 floodlights mounted in the portico's rafters popped on in a bright burst. The light from the halogen bulbs spilled over onto the surrounding grounds. Clearly illuminated under the glare were the bodies of Pitt and the others, stretched out beneath the rose bushes. Pitt tightened the grip on his .45 and casually took aim at the nearest horseman. The guards on foot were positioned farther away and did not appear to be armed. It was a different story with the horsemen. In addition to their lethal bows and arrows, Pitt was chagrined to see they all carried rifles, now shouldered and aimed in their direction. Though he noticed Giordino now had the Makarov aimed at a horseman as well, their odds were not at all attractive. The gunfight became moot when a flurry of footsteps echoed from the marble foyer and 4 bodies burst onto the porch. The 3 guards who had rushed across the compound took a few steps out, then stopped and stared at Pitt and the others.
Smoke and ashes blackened their bright orange tunics, but there was no panic in the men's eyes. Of more concern to Pitt were the AK-74 assault rifles they now cradled in their arms. Busting past the gunman was the fourth man, who charged to the center of the driveway as if he owned it, which he well did. Borjin was dressed in a blue silk robe, which contrasted with his beet red face flush with anger. He glared to the side bushes where the stripped and unconscious bodies of the door guards lay visible under the bright lights. Borjin turned to Pitt and the others with an apoplectic gaze. Then, in a measured voice, he growled, "I will have retribution for this."